if you follow local news, and we hope you do, all right, there have been a number of stories, different outlets, about a very historic barn, which is south of State College at Rock Springs, that is in danger, apparently, of being demolished on Penn State land. This is Scott. Again, if you're a regular listener, I'm a history guy. I'm a history guy with a little knowledge about historic barns, which I will share later on. But first, let's introduce our guest, Vicki Dodato, Vicki Kepler Dodato, who, if you've seen the stories, you've seen quotes from Vicki trying to save this barn down at Rock Springs. First off, Vicki, good morning, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Good morning, and thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
You're welcome. Again, this is the what's called the Kepler Barn, and again, we're just going to talk with Vicki for like 15 or 20 minutes here. If you folks, if you go online, search the barn, you'll see the local stories that have been running recently or have run recently. Vicki, we always start usually when we have a guest to say, all right, first off, tell us something about you. First off, I know you're not from around here. You're from Ohio, actually. Tell us about yourself, if you would, and what is your connection with the Kepler Barn? Tell us about you first.
Sure, Scott. Actually, I am from there. I grew up in Pine Grove Mills. I grew up on the Kepler Farm next to Millie Kepler, where the barn is. And that was my childhood. I am in Ohio due to marriage, and that's where my career is. I'm actually a trauma therapist, licensed here in Ohio, but that is why the barn is so close to me. I learned how to ride in that barn. I learned how to make Concord grape jam and jelly from Aunt Millie. I could go on and on. Aunt Millie was a significant part of my childhood. And just to give the backdrop, Jacob Kepler came to the Nittany Valley area long before it was anything else by name in the 1790s and settled my ancestors there. So I'm actually his great-great-great-granddaughter. And originally then, the Kepler Farm, or what's known as the Kepler Farm, began as 350 to 600 acres on this side of the mountain. And my great-grandfather, when he passed away, divided the land to my grandfather and his other son, which is who Aunt Millie married, just to give a backdrop. So I grew up on the land. My father inherited it. And so our properties abutted each other. And so I would go back and forth from our farm to Aunt Millie's quite a bit. I could go on and on, but that's my connection to the land, the property, and to Aunt Millie.
All right. Now tell us about the barn. Usually, in the stories I've seen, is just called the Kepler Barn. I've driven past it a bunch of times, although I'll be honest, it's like, oh, there's a barn, and I just kind of kept on driving. Tell us about this barn, because it clearly has some serious history. Tell us about the barn, please.
Well, it does. At the time, when Aunt Millie owned it, so obviously it had a history long before her. It says 1818 on the side of the barn. And just recently I was able to discover, I knew about, we called it the lost town of Herbtown. It was on our property and Aunt Millie's property at the foot of the mountain. And it was the first mill, flour, blacksmith shop. I mean, I could go on. It became the first town in that region. Very industrious family, the Herbs. And long story short, there's a gentleman writing a book about that, and he was very helpful in giving me pictures and maps from the 1800s, just a wealth of information. But we were able to piece together that very likely, because that mill was right behind the farmhouse where Aunt Millie lived, that that's probably where all the wood that built the barn came from. It has massive beams. It's historic for a number of reasons, but it's got, we're told by barn preservationists that came from Maryland to look at the property a year ago, that they have done this work for 40 years all over the country and in some parts of Europe, and their job is preserving barns, or if they can't preserve them, taking the most historic pieces and getting them to other barns that are being rebuilt. And in their mind, this was one of the most massive seamless beams they had ever seen. Another interesting feature is Aaron Kepler, who was Millie's husband, was the first, which I find interesting, to put up hand-blown glass lightning rods. And I discovered an article from, oh gosh, very early, that he had them made and put 23 of them on the house and the barn, because back then most barns that were burned to the ground were burned from lightning strikes. So it just seems interesting to me that no one came up with that idea prior to that time. But there's just a lot of information, and those lightning rods are still on the barn and the house. It's the second largest bank barn in the state, or was at the time. It's over 20,000 square feet. And my aunt ran it. I don't want to say she was an incredible person, a remarkable woman, but even more so, an amazing farmer, and eventually earned the respect of the male farmers in the area. I can't tell you, we don't have time for all the stories that I've heard from them, but just saying Millie Kepler was my role model. And that's probably the biggest compliment that she would say, because she had to work hard as a woman in 1929 when her husband died. That was 10 years before legally a woman could even apply for a mortgage. And the farm was foreclosed on. She lost two sons, one in front of her on Route 45 crossing to do his barn chores, lost her husband, widowed at 33. And during the Depression, the USDA named her Rosie the Riveter of the farm world, and she won many national and state awards because of her potato production, the strawberry production. She outproduced any male farmer in the state of Pennsylvania. I've read different stories. Some say 2-1, 3-1, some say 5-1. But the point being, she earned her place of respect as a female farmer. And I just want to add, because I thought it was interesting that the United Nations just a few weeks ago proclaimed this coming year as the International Year of the Female Farmer. So I thought that was nice timing for what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that's very good timing. How about that? I didn't realize 20,000 square feet. That's a big barn.
It's huge, yes.
Wow, okay. Now, right now, the barn is Penn State's ownership, correct? Penn State owns it.
Correct.
Okay, now how did that happen exactly?
Well, just to clear up, and I want to be clear, this is not an anti-Penn State remark at all. I want to be clear. Dean Troyant has been incredibly helpful. He's the new dean of the Department of Agriculture. So he came on to this kind of in the middle of it and, you know, had to hit the ground running. But my father, Don Kepler, who was well-known in the area, and then Millie, both, I knew this growing up, neither of them ever wanted the farmland to ever fall into not just Penn State's hands, but a realtor to be turned into a residential area. They both firmly believed that farmland should be passed on to farmers. And so my father so believed that before he died, he actually sold our farmland to our neighboring farmer, the Cokers, who own it to this day. But he wanted to make sure that nothing went wrong after he passed away, that he knew our farm would continue on being farmed. And Aunt Millie had the same belief and hope. Unfortunately, the two remaining daughters she lost both sons. The two daughters moved away, married, and they were not going to take over the barn. So it was left when she died in the hands of her granddaughter. And she rented it. She tried her best to not make it, to not sell it. At any rate, a family named the DeHaases actually rented the farmhouse for 8 years, and then they purchased the barn. And their plans were to, he had a construction company, and their plans were they stored all of his equipment. So you can imagine how heavy that equipment was. We have letters of support from them stating that this was a structurally sound barn that Aunt Millie left it in. Well, their plans changed, and in 2006, they were the family that sold the barn to Penn State. And we have a letter of support from them saying how much they regret that, that they assumed it would be continued to be farmed, to be preserved. But that's how it ended up in Penn State's hands. It was not through the Kepler family because they really wanted to keep it as farmland. I hope that explains it somewhat.
Sure, yeah. Now, okay, so Penn State's had the barn for about 20 years. Is the barn, I've seen pictures of the barn, and it doesn't look good. I mean, it looks like it's in various states of disrepair. Has nothing been happening with the barn for 20 years?
Other than deterioration, there was a storm. Now, this is where I'm not sure. A couple years after they purchased it, I could be wrong on the date, where some of the shingles were blown off, and we knew that. And even back then, some of the local farmers asked if the barn be repaired or the roof. It wasn't, so you can imagine that decades later, the rain and the way it has really, really deteriorated. So, no, it has not been used. And their plans, and they are very clear that their plans are to take the barn down. Luckily, we were able through, it's been from my involvement, I'll say active involvement, for the last 5 years we've had, oh, you don't know how many Zoom calls, meetings, phone calls, et cetera. But in January, February, we were given the go-ahead or the official, okay, if you can raise $500,000, we'll save it. So we have not had much time, obviously. So we're working very hard, very fast, furiously, to preserve it. The official fundraiser kickoff was last Sunday, and I was in the area for that and did a PowerPoint presentation for a few hours of just the history of the barn, the area, all of it. And then now we've got until June 1st to raise the $500,000. So obviously, if we'd had the last 5 years, that could have been possible. With a $20 here, $100 donation, you know, over 5 years. But I realize I'm realistic enough to know that 2 months to raise $500,000 is more than a long shot, Scott. But all it takes is one or two what we call barn champions, somebody to come forward who has the money or the passion. We're praying for a farmer, but a business, someone who can see the value of this being preserved, not just to preserve it, but to use it as an agricultural, even museum, multi-use facility for 4-H, Grange, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, a teaching facility. We've even looked into the graduate students at Penn State, not just in the Department of Agriculture, but architecture, history, preservation. Those are all degrees, and they all have graduate students that could be working on this in that way to turn it into a number of uses.
Vicki, I just want to clear up a couple of things. Do you know why? I understand Penn State bought it. Do you know what the intent was? And have they been using it, the land? Have they been using that, or has just this whole property just sat basically idle? In which case, again, I'm wondering why Penn State bought the property to begin with. And especially, this is a university that has some serious economic issues facing it. Why did it buy it, and why is it trying so hard to hang on to it and come up with the deadline that they did? Do you know where that came from?
Those questions I'm going to refer for you to ask Penn State, Scott.
Yep. We can do that. I got it.
All right, so Penn State has told you, hey, raise, and that's a lot of money, $500,000 by June 1. Now, let's say, Vicki, you can do that, all right? Amazingly, boom, you've got the money. So what, you hand the money to Penn State and they fix up the barn? I mean, is that what they're thinking about?
They have agreed, my understanding, and I want to be clear, this is our, when I say our, the Historic Barn and Farm Foundation, so I refer to them as HBFF. They have been behind this, the Center County Historical Society. There have been many, many groups involved. And Preservation PA, which is located, obviously, in Pennsylvania, has a real vested interest in preserving historical buildings. So there are many, many involved. All I can say is our understanding is that's what they tell us it would cost to stabilize it, and then from there, of course, it could take more money and much longer to actually restore it to its original stature. But the point being, if we don't stabilize it, it's slowly deteriorating, falling down, and with every storm or rain, you know, it gets worse.
All right.
I will say, I truly believe this could have been prevented from the get-go. So, but this is where we are, and
right.
So this is, like I said in the earlier interview, I know it's like the end of the fourth quarter, and this is a Hail Mary, and not to be funny, and I'm not Tom Brady, but I'm going to give it our best shot. That's all I can say, and just pray that somewhere out there, I know they are, it's just, can we find them before June 1st? Somebody who would love to take over this project, and I'll leave it at that.
All right, now, Vicki, we'll go local. You're Drew Aller, okay? You're not Tom Brady.
Oh, there you go.
Drew Aller, okay?
Hey, his family is very near where I am living currently, so
Okay.
Love it.
So
he's actually an Ohio boy. And,
yeah. Now, Vicki, I think, if I'm correct, there was some type of fundraiser this past weekend. I mean, money-wise, right now at least, how's it going?
We don't know. That money, thank you for the reminder. This is very important. One of the things we felt very strongly about, and I'm pleased that we were able to do this, I got a call from a farmer near, and obviously he'll remain nameless, and I didn't know him, but he said, I'm just going to be blunt with you. And I love that. That's what farmers are.
Yes, no doubt.
He said, I've got a small chunk of money. I have no idea how much, and I didn't ask. That's not my business. But he said, I would like to give it to the barn. But he said, here's my problem. If I give it and the barn comes down, you know, then what? So we were able to work out with Preservation PA two ways to donate. One is, well, you send the money and there's a form to sign and you just check one of two boxes and basically it says, I am donating this amount, whatever it is, let me just say $1,000. I'm donating $1,000 to the Kepler Barn Project and with the understanding if the funds are not raised, I will get my donation back minus a 5% administrative cost. And then they do all the legal work, the IRS, and, you know, all of that. So people can donate, and I believe they'll donate more knowing that, oh, okay, I can donate this. If we don't reach it, I'll get it back. The other way to donate is I am donating this $1,000 with the understanding that if the money is not raised to save the Kepler Barn, it will go to HBFF, the Historic Barn and Farm Foundation, to help save another barn in Pennsylvania. So more or less to pay it forward. And I love that that we were able to work out that agreement because I think that satisfies everyone.
Now, if somebody's listening, Vicki, and they're like, hey, I want to be part of this. I mean, is there a phone number, a website? I mean, where can they go?
Currently getting it up on a website on Preservation PA, but I can give you, I'm looking it up right now on my deck, the address. Here it is. They can email me and I will send them the packet of material. So let me give you that. My email for any questions is D, as in David. So David Oscar Tom Kite, DOTK7. At AOL.com. And, or here's the address for Preservation, Pennsylvania. 1230 North 3rd Street, Suite 1, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17102. They need to make the checkout to Preservation, Pennsylvania, but note in the memo for the Kepler Barn. And it will be put into a reserve fund solely for the Kepler Barn. And then we'll know we'll know then, Scott, June 1st, what the outcome is. And as I said, if they want their money back, it will be returned if we don't raise it minus the 5% administrative fee. So I think that's a fair and equitable way for donations, and honestly not one you seldom see where you can actually donate and get money back if the goal isn't met.
Okay. All right. Now, again, Vicki, before we let you go, this is all about fixing up the barn. It's nothing else. It's not land. It's just simply fix up the barn so it's in a much better shape. And as you said, I think preferably somebody use it. You know, somebody use the barn. That's pretty much it, right, Vicki?
We have given Penn State a list of our suggestions. I mean, of course, they own it. It's up to them. But we have businessmen in the area who have, you know, approached to buy it. They want to turn it into an event center. I mean, there have been suggestions of a wedding venue. They could rent it from, you know, it could be self-supporting. But an ag museum is probably one of the most popular suggestions that we've gotten. But as I said, it could be a teaching facility for local school children about farming. It could be a multi-use facility.
All right. Now, before we let you go, all right, this is Scott. I'm from Penns Valley. All right.
Okay.
And I mentioned that for two reasons. Number one, if you're from around here and you think about historic barns, you think about the famous round barn outside,
yep,
Center Hall. Everybody knows, mm-hmm, it. Take pictures with it. I mean, the whole nine yards.
Right.
What a lot of people don't know is the guy that built that barn, the round barn, actually built three of them. One, and this was all around 100, 110 years ago. And one of the barns he built near Julianne, and unfortunately that one burned down several years after it was built, which, mm-hmm, is too bad. He also built one in Brush Valley. Now, that barn was in various states of disrepair because nobody was using it for decades, really. And that barn fell down in a storm in 1984. It just, poof, just collapsed, okay? I bought that property in 1988. That is where I live.
Oh, wonderful.
And so when I saw this story, it hit home with me about historic barns because I know a little bit about historic barns. And I thought, okay, this barn is 200 years old. We got to find,
right,
a way to, you know, keep this thing,
yeah,
standing.
Right.
Now, Vicki, I'm from Penns Valley. When I think barns, I think Amish. Has anybody approached the Amish community to say, "Hey guys, come over here and help us fix up this barn"? I'm betting they can do it for a lot less than $500,000. Has that ever come up?
Yes, it has, and thank you for bringing it up. I live in an area in Ohio where there is the county next to us is the largest Amish center out here. And, of course, Pennsylvania is known for its Amish. I have contacted people here. I even used pictures in my PowerPoint at the fundraiser. And people in Pine Grove Mills and State College have contacted Amish, what I say, over the mountain from our farm, Huntington. We have groups of Amish, but not only when you say do it cheaper, they would do it for free. Now I'm getting emotional. I can feel it because this is what is so frustrating. And I understand we did let Penn State know that, but because of union wages, this is the bureaucracy. That's all I know to call it. Is,
yep,
that they cannot be done. But that's the frustration, knowing that there are so many people invested in that it could be done for free, or at least a lot less than $500,000. They could have put the roof on decades ago and saved it. But, and I didn't even mention that before I hang up, I really do want to mention the connection with the Underground Railroad. That's a whole nother, connection. And that has been written up in the Lancaster Farming Gazette by a reporter, named Tom Zaneski. If anyone wants to go, just Google Kepler Barn, Underground Railroad, and that article will come up. But there's so many, stories around that my brother, I have four brothers, grew up with them on the farm, and we all have stories that were passed down through our family. And a year ago, my Facebook, I've made this post public if people want to go on my Facebook, but it was the April 24 post. I have probably 75 photos of when I went back to the farmhouse with a reporter, a spelunker, and a local farmer, and we were given access to go in and photograph. And they actually found, I mean, I have the pictures up, the photos of the tunnels, the trap doors, the secret room in the basement, the cave, Kepler Cave, where the slaves were supposedly hidden. My brother has the stories of, I could go on and on. Sorry, if you don't have the time, I know on today's program, but there is a wealth of information. The difficulty is we have no, quote, proof, but at least they do have the photos. And an interesting thing that I found was I knew my father was born in the farmhouse in 1909. What I didn't know is that at that time it was a log cabin. And by going back in and photographing it, we were able to see the original logs because they had done some remodeling and prove it was just very meaningful to me to stand there in that room with the logs and realize this is where my own father was born in 1909. And then, of course, they built the addition and made it a big white farmhouse. But I'd be more than glad to forward all of that information to you, Scott, or to anyone. At any rate.
Okay.
That'd be
great. Thank you for asking about the Amish connection.
Got to find a way. Vicki, we're out of time. I tell you what, you have my email address. Please keep us up to date. We do this, I don't know, countdown to June 1st or something. And I would, okay, union wages. I'm like, okay. Somehow I knew this is where this was going. The Amish could do this. Lickety split, and it would be done.
Right.
Anyway.
And it would be done well.
And it would be done well, yeah.
Yeah.
Vicki, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much today. Again, please keep me up to date via email, all right?
I sure will. Thank you so much for this opportunity. You're